Good morning. Please turn in your Bibles to Matthew chapter 5 if you want to follow along. I'll open this morning with one of my favorite quotes from Abraham Lincoln. He gave this as an addendum to his famous Gettysburg Address. Lincoln said, "Don't believe everything you read on the internet just because there's a picture with a quote next to it." He was honest and he was wise. Well, this quote shines a spotlight on one of the most pressing problems in our culture, which seems to be getting worse by the day. And that problem is, how do you know when someone is telling the truth? How do you know anymore? How do you know? You're reading an article online. How do you know if the so-called facts are accurate or are they made up, pulled from nowhere? How do you know when an elected official or someone who wants to be an elected official is telling the truth instead of spinning some scary tall tale designed to make themselves look really good and their opponents look really bad and to frighten us into voting for them? How do you know anymore? How do you know what to think when you read a press release from a large corporation that explains when key leaders knew what they knew and what they knew when they knew it and in the midst of the most recent scandal or crisis? How do you know anymore who is telling the truth? The truth, and I use that term loosely this morning, is that it's getting so hard to know what the truth is and where the truth can be found that more and more of us, maybe all of us, are already at this point. We've set our default position on skepticism and suspicion because we just don't know anymore. In God we trust, but all others pay cash. But before we lay blame at the feet of purveyors of fake news or crooked politicians or greedy executives for this epidemic of lying we have in our culture, let's first take stock of our relationship with the truth. How often do you lie? How often do you lie? Not just the big lies, but even the small little lies, the ones that you might think are harmless. In fact, you do it so much you don't even think about doing it anymore. You know what you call an action that you do without thinking about doing it? You call it a habit. How often do you lie? Well, if we're being honest, haha. The truth is, for many of us, we lie all the time. There was a study done several years ago, and I know you're thinking, how do we know that this study is true? I don't know. But several years ago, there was a study that said 60% of adults lie at least once in a 10-minute conversation. They recorded conversations between adults, 10-minute conversations, and then replayed the conversations for those that they recorded and said, how many times did you lie? 60% admitted to lying at least once. Several admitted to lying several times in a 10-minute conversation. Just was a natural and normal thing to do. 40% of adults lie on their resumes. Not just a bold-faced, out-and-out factual lie, but an exaggeration, an omission here or there, making it look a little better than it really is. 90% of singles lie on their online dating profiles. You look nothing like the picture of you I saw online. How long ago was that taken? And was it with a Polaroid? 30% of adults lie about having seen The Godfather. Now, this bothers me for a number of reasons. First off, I can't believe there are still people out there who haven't seen The Godfather. It's a leadership essential. But second, that people would actually lie about it? But who among us hasn't lied about seeing a classic movie or having read a classic novel at a dinner party or in a class or some other gathering because we so desperately want to appear educated, culturally elite, in the know, relevant? It happens all the time. It reminds me of this scene from Pride and Prejudice when the snooty rich guy and the snarky young woman are playing video games together and they have this big fight. Okay, it's possible I haven't seen it or read it. There's a number of ways that you can lie. We can lie by exaggeration or embellishment, but also minimization. We can omit, we can fabricate. We can spin, we can reframe, we can restructure. We can remain silent and let someone believe something that we know isn't true. We can mislead with a half-truth, saying just enough, but not quite everything. Don't we do it all the time? I told somebody after first service, I'm a pretty good premeditated truth teller. That when I know I'm going into a tough situation, I can tell the truth. It's when you catch me off guard and I got to think on my feet, that's when it's really easy to lie. It's just so much easier. Here are some of the most common everyday lies we tell. I'm almost there. I'm 5 minutes away. I really was 5 minutes away, but traffic was really bad. Smartphones are making it harder and harder to get away with that one. It must have gone to my spam folder. Never saw your email. I don't remember saying that. I do remember intentionally forgetting that I said it, but I don't remember ever saying that to you. Well, that makes sense. The truth is, it does not make sense. I just want you to stop talking. So yeah, it makes sense. I'm fine. I'm okay. I'm good. I've already got plans that day. And they include sitting at home alone, doing nothing instead of doing something with you. I didn't see you there. Actually, I saw you there as soon as I walked in, but I was hoping you didn't see me and we didn't have to have this awkward greeting conversation, but I didn't see you there. Let's get together soon. Send me an email. I'll make sure it goes to my spam folder. Your baby is adorable. And so is my pet lizard. I'll be praying for you. That never happens at church, does it? Hi, I'm from the federal government and I'm here to help. No, that outfit doesn't make you look fat. Sometimes this is true. It's not the outfit that makes you look fat. It's the half gallon of ice cream you ate all by yourself last night that makes you look fat. There are a myriad of ways to lie, mislead, and deceive, but you boil it all down, there are two primary motives for lying. One is we lie to avoid the consequences of telling the truth. And the other is we lie to gain something from telling a lie. We lie out of fear because we are so afraid of what will happen if we actually dared to tell the truth. We lie to avoid trouble. It's one of the reasons it's so tempting and so easy, we might even rationalize, so permissible to lie to your spouse or your coworkers or your close friends, because there are times when it's just so much easier to lie than to get bogged down in an inconvenient truth. I don't have time to talk about it right now, I'll just lie. We lie out of desire to get something we want. We think in order to get what we want, we have to set aside the truth in some instances. See, the narrative, the false narrative, the lie that liars believe and tell themselves over and over again is, I need to lie to get by. That's why I have to make exaggerations on my resume. That's why I have to pretend to be something I'm not online or even in person, because if you really knew me, if you really knew the truth about me, you'd never hire me. You would never go out with me. You would never want to hang out with me. So I lie to get what I want or to avoid what I don't want. I have to have a flexible relationship with the truth. Now enter Jesus into this discussion. Because in Matthew chapter 5, he calls his disciples to a much simpler and far more radical relationship with the truth. This is what he says beginning in verse 33. Again, you have heard that it was said to the people long ago, do not break your oath, but fulfill to the Lord the vows you have made. But I tell you, do not swear an oath at all. either by heaven, for it is God's throne, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make even one hair white or black. All you need to say is simply yes or no. And anything beyond this comes from the evil one. Now, in the background of this teaching from Jesus, there are a number of passages in the Old Testament that speak to the necessity of keeping an oath, living up to the vows you make, especially when you make them to the Lord. Deuteronomy 23, verse 21 says, "If you make a vow to the Lord your God, do not be slow to repay it. For the Lord your God will certainly demand it of you, and you will be guilty of sin. But if you refrain from making a vow, you will not be guilty. So whatever your lips utter, you must be sure to do, because you made your vow freely to the Lord your God with your own mouth." Be careful what vows you make, because you will be held accountable. And then Leviticus 19:12 says, "Do not swear falsely by my name, and so profane the name of your God. I am the Lord." Because if you make a vow to the Lord, or you make an oath by invoking the Lord's name, and then you break your vow, you don't keep your oath, you're profaning the name of the Lord. You're involving the Lord in your dishonesty. This is likely what the third commandment in the Ten Commandments is really about. Exodus 20, verse 7, "Do not misuse," or "do not take the name of the Lord in vain." Maybe some of us were raised believing that was just about cussing or cursing or saying certain words, and there's certainly room for that in there, but primarily it's a prohibition about making an oath to the Lord or using the Lord's name when you make a vow and then not following through. That brings disgrace upon the name of the Lord. So the law is fairly clear and consistent on this. Don't break your oaths. Fulfill the vows you make to the Lord. But in Jesus' day, the Pharisees and the teachers of the law were exploiting a loophole where they said, okay, that's true, that's what the law says, but if you were to make your vow and swear by something other than the Lord's name, something lesser than the Lord, we'll call it the lesser object loophole. If you swear by something else, not the Lord, heaven, earth, Jerusalem, the temple, your head, doesn't really matter, just swear by something less than God, then if you don't keep your vow, if you're caught in a falsehood, you still haven't broken the law. You haven't broken one of the Big Ten Commandments because you didn't swear by the name of the Lord. It was this game they played to wiggle out of their vows and their oaths. And later on in the Gospel of Matthew chapter 23, Jesus blasts the Pharisees for the way they arbitrarily decide which oaths are binding and which ones aren't, depending on the object of the vow or the oath. He says in chapter 23, verse 16, "Woe to you, blind guides! You say, if anyone swears by the temple, it means nothing. But anyone who swears by the gold of the temple is bound by that oath. You blind fools, which is greater, the gold or the temple that makes the gold sacred? You also say, if anyone swears by the altar, it means nothing. But anyone who swears by the gift on the altar is bound by that oath." I guess it's kind of like crossing your fingers behind your back when making a promise. "Yeah, I'll do it, I promise. Oh, by the way, I didn't swear by the gold in the temple, I swear by the temple." Didn't count. That kind of game. And already in Matthew 5, where Jesus talks about you don't swear by your heaven or the earth or Jerusalem or your head, he's already saying this lesser object loophole simply doesn't work. Because anytime you swear by an object, it belongs to the Lord already. It is already under the Lord's control. And therefore, you are bringing the Lord into your oath and your vow, whether you use his name or not. So one of the things Jesus is teaching in Matthew 5 is if you do swear by anything at all, you are bound to keep your word, bound to tell the truth. But that's really just an illustration of this larger principle about his disciples' relationship with the truth. Because the bottom line to his teaching is this, to his disciples. He says, I want you to be the kind of people who don't have to make oaths or vows at all. I want you to be able to sidestep and avoid the hypocrisy of the lesser object loophole and just be the kind of people who never need to make a vow or take an oath. Because why are oaths necessary? Why do you have to go that extra step? You make a statement, you make a pledge, you say you're going to do something, and then you have to go an extra step to validate what you've said. Why are they necessary? Because oaths and vows assume that people can't be trusted. Something more than our word is required. It's built into the brokenness of existence. And we learn at an early age, don't we, that sometimes you got to say a little extra to get somebody to believe you on the playground. Cross my heart, hope to die, stick a needle in my... That's a graphic vow. That could be straight out of Leviticus. I swear on my mother's grave. Man, your mom's not even dead yet. Don't you be talking about my mama. Or what about in conversation? This always drives me crazy. You're talking and somebody says, let me be honest with you. What does that mean? Let me be honest with you, because up until this point, I haven't been. I've been lying. You can't believe a word I just said, but from this point forward, let me be honest with you. It's like when a preacher says, this is a true story, because most of my stories aren't. They're all made up. So what Jesus is doing in Matthew 5 is he's critiquing the hypocrisy of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law and the games they play with the truth, but he's also calling his disciples to that deeper kind of righteousness where they can sidestep the hypocrisy and become the kind of people who, when they say yes, it means yes, always. And when they say no, it means no, always. And when they sign up for something at church, put their name down on a volunteer sheet and say, yeah, I'll be there. Yeah, I'll help with that. The minister or ministry leader doesn't have to go, well, I wonder if they'll actually show up. I wonder if they'll actually help. You can never tell. You know, Jesus says, you're a follower. Of course you put your name on something. You're going to do what you say you're going to do, and you're going to show up when you say you're going to show up. Or if you can, at least you're going to call ahead and let somebody know so we don't leave anybody hanging. Because we're followers of Christ. Our yes is yes. Our no is no. We put our name on something. It should mean something. Jesus says anything beyond a yes or a no, when we get so broken in our relationships, so suspicious, so skeptical that we can't take yes or no from someone else, but it requires more than that, Jesus says that's not from God, that's from the evil one, whom in other places he calls the father of lies. That's evidence of the way deception has been woven into the very fabric of our existence. And he calls us back to yes and no. Now, I don't necessarily think that Jesus is teaching his disciples that it's always inappropriate to make an oath, say in a court of law or when signing a legal document. Don't think that's what he's really getting at. In fact, later on in Matthew chapter 26, Jesus speaks under oath at his trial. Verse 63, the high priest said to him, I charge you under oath by the living God. Tell us if you are the Messiah, the Son of God. And Jesus says, you have said so. But I say to all of you, from now on, you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on the clouds of heaven. Now Jesus, he describes himself truthfully. Yeah, you're calling me the Son of God. I'm also the Son of Man. But he doesn't stop and say, I'm sorry, before this trial can proceed, I need to let you know I'm honor bound to not take an oath. As always, this teaching from Jesus isn't some new law or command that we're supposed to apply legalistically. It's an invitation from Jesus instead to become the kind of people who are so committed to speaking and then living out the truth that everyday oaths and vows are rendered obsolete. We just don't need them when dealing with each other. Now, does this mean that as followers of Christ, we should always tell the truth in any and every situation? All the time? Are there some situations in which telling the truth as a follower of Christ might not be wise or advisable? In one of his letters, the Apostle Paul uses the phrase, speaking the truth in love. Can you think of situations where love, the higher principle of love, would require us to not speak the truth, maybe even lie for the sake of a higher good? Ooh. Let's wrestle with that. I think so. One example that comes to mind is Joshua 2, Rahab the prostitute. She not only hides, but lies about the whereabouts of the Israelite spies. And her faithful action on their behalf is celebrated throughout the scriptures. Or what about those in Europe who lied to the Nazis when they were hiding their Jewish neighbors to save their lives? So yeah, maybe there is a higher good, a higher law of love that at times would justify telling a lie or not speaking the truth. But here's where this is so dangerous. We can use the dramatic example and exception of saving someone's life as rationalization and justification for going around developing the habit of lying to make ourselves look better or to keep from making someone else feel bad. And we can call it love when it's really not love. So there are situations where it is unloving to someone else to not tell them the truth, to not give them a dose of reality. One writer calls this ruinous empathy. You think it's the right thing to do because I care about you and I don't want to hurt your feelings, and so I won't tell you the truth, or I might just tell you part of the truth, or maybe I'll just let you believe a lie. And I'm actually destroying you because I'm protecting you from the truth because I don't want to hurt you. It's worth thinking about and wrestling with, how do we create cultures in our homes and at church and at work where we love and trust each other enough that we can speak to each other the truth in love, what that same writer calls radical candor, which when delivered in a context of love is much better for everyone than ruinous empathy. How do we do that? How do we speak the truth in love to each other in a loving way? Well, that's kind of uncomfortable, so let's move on. Because the larger principle at work in this teaching from Christ is, as he has done with the other examples we've studied already, he's telling us yet another way that we can be salt and light in a culture of lies. And that is by being people whose yes means yes and no means no, and we do what we say we're going to do, so much so that our neighbors begin to trust us as people who always tell the truth. Years ago, Lee Strobel told a story about a little leaguer named Tanner. And Tanner, one game, it was an important game in Little League, because in Little League, they're all important. It's an important game in Little League, and he's playing first base, and grounder comes to him, and he feels the grounder. He's in between first and second, and there's a runner running in between first and second, so he reaches out and tags the runner. The ump says, "He's out!" And Tanner says to the ump, "Oh, I missed him. I didn't tag him." And the ump says, "Are you serious?" "Yeah, I missed him. I didn't touch him." And the ump says, "Okay, he's safe!" And Tanner's coach went crazy. "What?" And then a couple of weeks later, Tanner's playing shortstop. Another grounder comes his way. There's a runner in between second and third. Tanner fields the ball, reaches out to tag the runner. The ump, same one as last time, he said, "He's safe!" Tanner, oh, pitches the ball to the pitcher. And the ump says, "What's wrong, Tanner?" Tanner said, "I got him this time." And the ump says, "Really?" "Yeah, I touched him." "Okay, he's out." And the opposing coach went crazy. You can't do that. And the ump says, no, 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 this is Tanner. He tells the truth. Even when it hurts, he tells the truth. And if he said that he tagged your runner's out. End of discussion. Our world desperately needs more Tanners right now. Truth tellers. Yes is yes. No is no. I said I'll do it. I'll do it. Even if it hurts. Even when it doesn't work out to my benefit. Not long before he was executed by the Nazis, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who spent a lot of time wrestling with Jesus' teachings in the Sermon on the Mount, trying to figure out how to live them out in the face of evil in Germany, he said, what the church will need, what our century will need, are not people of genius, not brilliant tacticians or strategists, but simple, straightforward, honest men and women. That's still what the world needs. Now more than ever, it's still what the church needs. It's still what this city needs. A kind of people so committed to telling and living out the truth that we're capable of leading our neighbors who are justifiably suspicious and skeptical and are just as tired of being lied to as we are, of leading them closer to the ultimate source of truth. And if disciples of Christ don't step up and own the truth, be the truth in our culture, who will? I want to finish by challenging you in response to this teaching from Jesus to give yourself a truth and integrity audit this week. Just pay attention. Pay attention to what you say and what you do, what you don't say and what you don't do. Pay attention to all the many different ways, big or small, you lie. You shave something off the truth. Just note it. Pay attention to it. Notice when you say you're going to do something and then you don't follow through on what you said you were going to do. And then ask yourself, why? Why am I doing that? Why am I lying? Why am I remaining silent? Why am I operating in half-truths? Why am I saying, telling people I'll do something and then I'm not doing it? Ask yourself why. What am I afraid of? What am I trying to avoid the consequences of by telling a lie? Or what am I trying to get by compromising my relationship with the truth? Ask yourself that question. And then as you're doing this audit and you get to look within, you're going to discover something about yourself and your relationship with the truth. And if you don't like what you find, spend some time taking that to the Lord. Ask for forgiveness, but also ask for a new heart. Ask that God would give you the ability and the strength and the courage to build your life on the bedrock of truth instead of the quicksand of lies. But maybe you don't need to do the audit. It may be you already know the truth about your relationship with the truth. And if so, then you also already know what to pray and what to say right now as we stand and sing.